The Fan on Demand.
Welcome to the party in Las Vegas. PartyPoker.net invites you to play for a spot in the biggest tournament on the planet, the World Series of Poker. Play in one of the daily qualifiers to earn your way to the WSOP with a $14,000 prize package and a chance to win your share of over $192 million in prize money. Qualify now and play for free at PartyPoker.net. Terms and conditions apply. Players must be aged 18 or over.
Welcome to another edition of The Poker Show with Chris DeCero, brought to you by PartyPoker.net here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm Rob Wong, and we have a special in-studio guest, the one, the only, Daniel Negreanu. Welcome home, Daniel. It's been a while, has it?
Aw, thanks. Welcome home. Where's my welcome home vegan carrot cake that you promised me?
Chris promised that. I didn't promise anything.
Yeah, I, you know what? This is going to be a tough day for Rob because I haven't told him yet that he's fired and you're the co-host for this show. So,
all right,
Rob, thanks for coming out.
And
yeah, this is just going to be the Daniel show from here on. No, listen, hey, great to see you back in town. Obviously, in town, strange world we live in that you have to come to Toronto, your former hometown, in order to do your job. It used to be you had to go to Vegas to do your job, and now you have to come to Toronto to do your job.
Well, take that a step further, and I'll tell you one. You know, what's funny is that you think about like the Cold War. You know, when there was communism and we thought, oh, those Russians, there's no freedom. Well, now, you know, if you're from Pennsylvania and you want to play online poker, well, you can't do it there. But you could fly to Moscow, Russia and play poker on your underwear because it's freedom, you know? So it's just amazing. No, who would have thunk it?
Yeah, it's interesting that the way that this whole thing has developed and changed because, you know, now, as you know, well know, some of the biggest poker players in the world are like, you know, heading to Mexico, heading to Vancouver seems to be a good destination, heading to Europe to ply their trades.
Here,
and,
mostly.
Yeah, and Toronto is a big destination as well. And so many guys 15 years ago, 20 years ago, just before the internet got going, when you were coming up through the ranks, it was the exact opposite flight pattern. I mean, you know, you would build your bankroll and then you'd head to Vegas. And that was where you wanted to be in order to make it. And now it's turned around completely.
Yeah, now we've got U.S. misplaced vagabonds just spreading spreading the world. A lot of them in Canada, Cabo, as you mentioned. When I was on the flight from Monte Carlo, Toronto, there's a bunch of poker players on there and they're all coming here to play Scoop.
Yeah. You know what? We could probably get the charity casinos going again. The old charity, the traveling charity casinos, start that circuit. You could play 10-20 again.
Oh, God, this sounds awful.
And for all the people that have done it, that are coming north or going to other destinations, has it been sustainable? Have they been able to handle it? I mean, it's been a year and change now, I guess. But
you know what I think most of them are doing? Like, here's the thing. Most of these traveling tournament guys, they're not at home anyway. So let's say they live in New York. They don't really spend a lot of time there anyways. They're always traveling the world, and that hasn't changed. So if a guy moves to Toronto, you know, quote unquote, I mean, he's here when he's playing online, but he's also in Europe. So it's just a question of, like, how comfortable you are living the lifestyle of a nomad for a little while. But I think most of the people that I've heard talked about, you know, being in Toronto, they love it. They like the city. There's, you know, nothing not to love.
Yeah, for sure.
But is it parking? What the hell, man?
Oh, this city is
ridiculous.
Do parking and driving.
Just dumb.
The traffic here in Toronto, rush hour in Toronto, is like from 2 in the afternoon till 7:30 at night. And it's worse than the L.A. freeway. And I know you drive around in L.A. It's worse than the L.A. freeway. It's worse than New York City. It's worse than Manhattan.
You're really making me depressed because after this, I got to hit that traffic.
You only have to drive up to the airport through rush hour traffic. I'm sure it'll only take you 3 hours.
Thanks.
I live out the same way, too. You know,
well, it was nice of you guys to spring for the helicopter to get me home.
That was for sure. Sorry, anything we can do.
Did I mention that?
That was Monaco, where you fly from Nice to Monte Carlo in the helicopter. This is Toronto. We could get you a subway token. Actually,
thanks.
Do we have the budget for a subway token?
You know what? I actually have one in my pocket. I can actually show it to you right now. I have one. That's all I need.
Don't really want to see anything in your pocket. So you were in town, obviously, for a couple weeks, a week or so, to play some online poker, to ply your trade, fulfill your contractual obligations.
Well, no, actually, I don't have to play online. I play online because I choose to, and I feel like I'm sort of zoning right now. I'm playing good poker, and I'm excited. You know, I want to win stuff. I want to continue to win. And although online doesn't count for, you know, the player of the year kind of stuff, it's just a good way to keep sharp. And the World Series is coming up, and I want to play some different games and just get my head into it.
Well, we were talking on the walk over here. You know, you had a very good tournament in Monte Carlo and a couple of big cashes in a couple of big buy-in events. Is that a big mindset difference to come back here and then start to play that online grind of the big online tournaments? Like, does that mess your game up?
I don't know. You know, I think a little bit it can. But at the same time, you know, I did so well at the W Coupe. this last year, and I cashed like 17 times or something like that, and I was always doing it. And it's, you know, playing online is different. Now I'm focusing on my tracking software. I'm using those websites where you find out like how good or bad your opponents are in terms of their results. You know, there's sites that track that sort of stuff, so I check those. And thinking about the game differently in terms of like, you know, taking notes and whatnot. But it's still poker. You know, it's still poker at the core. So, I don't know. We'll see how it goes. Again, unfortunately, I'm only gonna play the first week. Then I got to get back to LA, and Vegas, and I got to do this fun show in LA for a couple days.
What fun show are you doing in LA? Can't talk.
No, I'm just doing some, you know, stuff for Poker Stars and
the Secret Life of Daniel Negreanu. I want to talk. We're going to talk about the Secret Life of Daniel Negreanu because it's interesting, and you live a lifestyle. I mean, first of all, you're a rock star, and it's funny, but we've been places together, and if we're walking down the hallway with, say, Phil Kessel and Daniel Negreanu, you're better than even bet to be the guy that people want their picture and their autograph taken with.
Maybe that's because Phil's not so charming, right?
I'm sending him a copy of this.
Yeah,
tape.
Right.
It really is a rock star lifestyle for you. I mean, does that ever get to wear on you a little bit?
I've been enjoying it more the last year or so.
But there are perks.
It's I'm comfortable with where I'm at in life. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm single. I'm. booms. What am I? Who's editing this thing? Yeah. traveling the world is fun. You get to see a lot of beautiful things.
Yeah. Wow.
So Scoop, anyway.
This is like TMZ. This is all of a sudden has become TMZ.
Well, who are like the kind of people that come up to you? I mean, is it usually fans? Is it players that want to know, get some advice?
Players I'm friends with, most of them. So we hang out, we go, you know, drinking out, you know, in Monte Carlo, wherever we go. But in terms of other people that are, you know, saying hello to you, they're generally going to be fans.
I got a question for you. This is a measure. This should be like part of the what do they call it, the Q factor, whatever, that measures your celebrity status. How many autographs have you signed that have become tattoos? I know of one, and I found out about another one not that long ago.
Well, there was one on, I tattooed a guy's arm, and he
Niagara Falls. Tattooed, I was with you when the guy
but
came.
But that just pales in comparison to the real tattoo.
Yes.
This woman approached me at the World Series of Poker, and she turned around and she said, "Sign my ass." And I was okay, so I signed it. And then her husband was there, and she says, "I'm going to go get this tattooed on my back right now." It was in the tramp stamp area, and I was like, "Ha ha, very funny." She comes back. Lo and behold, there's a tattoo of my name attached to the bottom of her butt. And then she came back the next year and had like WSOP Rio Kid Poker 2010 tattooed around my signature on the small of her back. So that's probably, I mean, I'm at two, but that one, that one takes the cake.
I saw the picture and I mean, there's certainly some flattery in there. I mean, it's flattering, but it kind of creeped me out a little bit.
Because you're thinking from the husband's perspective, and if he ever likes to do it in that way, that he's going to be like, "What the hell am I looking at right now?"
And where do you draw the line? Where do you draw the line on that kind of stuff? I mean, you're a very personable guy, and you talk about all the fans that approach you. But when you get stuff like that, I mean, does that make you kind of get into a shell a little bit? You know, moving forward.
No, that stuff's all fun and doesn't bother me. The issue you have sometimes, like someone will come up and say, "Hey, man, you know, really like watching you play. Can I get a picture, or whatever?" And you're like, "Okay, cool."
Yeah,
and then. There's usually just sort of a respect that you like, okay, now leave me alone. Like, don't hang out, you know? And sometimes I'll like pull up a chair and I'm talking to friends and we'll be talking about some personal things and they sort of feel more, and you don't want to be rude and be like, "Dude, get the hell out of here," you know? But, you know, most people are very good about it, but often when people drink, then they start to tell me their stories and then it becomes like, instead of it becoming a picture, it becomes a problem. Like, actually, speaking of that, I had this problem in L.A., this girl she's like, "Hey, how you doing?" I thought we might know her, but we didn't. So I hugged her, and then her and her friend sort of sandwiched me at the bar. And I thought we were with these people. We were meeting people there, and I didn't know. And then apparently she's like, "Oh, I took a picture with you like 10 years ago." And I'm like, "I don't know you. We're not with you people." And then I realized it. And she was really drunk, and she started to she's like, "Come here, I have to tell you something in your ear." And she kind of licked my ear a little weird.
Ooh.
And she had a little bad breath, like it was hot, spicy peanuts with, you know, whiskey.
Yeah.
And then she wouldn't leave, right? Because I need to use the bathroom. I didn't. And then I was walking by my friends. So, make a long story short, security was like, you know, do you want to get rid of her? And I was like, yeah, kind of, under my breath. I was like, can you get rid of her? She heard that. She took a drink and just launched it into my face.
Wow.
I mean, just ice just drenched me. I was totally soaked. I didn't have a change of clothes in L.A. But, yeah, that was a moment where I'm like, I was trying to be discreet, but security's like, comes right up to me and is like, do you want her gone? And I'm like, really? You're putting me on the spot like that? Drink to the face.
Yeah.
Is that a tough position for you to be in? Because, I mean, there's a point, too. I mean, first of all, you're a celebrity, but you're a celebrity that lives in a world where money is very much part of the scene most of the time. Security and things like that. Does that, because I've been out with you. People have no problem, because of your personality and your outgoing personality, people have no problem coming up to you like they're your best friend. Does that ever run through your head, the whole security issue? Like, A, is this guy a psycho stalker? B, could it be someone out to rob me? You know, the guys have been robbed in the past. Like, and I know you're a tough guy.
Yeah.
We know that you're a tough guy. You're crew from Scarborough. Yeah. You're from the hood. You're a tough guy, but it's still got to cross your mind.
Well, I mean, this just comes down to being able to get a read on somebody. And when you see a little psycho in them or whatever, you try to find escape, you know, a way out. And I usually will, if I have to, subtle ways of like, you know, all right, man, good luck to you. You know, when I start doing that, I'm like, all right, man, well, it's good. You know, if I start walking away and they're not getting the picture, I'll find a way to get. But I'm not worried from a security perspective. I'm usually with people if I'm out, and some very scary, bad people who are all armed and dangerous, just for the record.
You're not even joking.
No,
I mean, I've met some of your
you.
Childhood friends, and you're very good to your childhood friends, the guys that you grew up with.
My regiment's them.
Those are some tough dudes that you run with.
Yeah, my posse's tough.
Is there like a particular spot in the world, a certain location that you get recognized the most? I mean, obviously you're from here, but you spend your time in Las Vegas as well, but is there a place where people just go crazy? It's like, you know, David Hasselhoff in Germany. Like, is it kind of like that?
You know, it feels like I've had more experiences like that here in Toronto than I have anywhere else. So I would actually have to say Toronto. Toronto seems to be a little bit of a celebrity-obsessed culture. Like, I look at the TV channels. You know, you got Star TV, you got TMZ, you got all these channels dedicated to just what are celebrities doing, like Entertainment Canada. So it feels like, I don't know why the complex is there for Toronto, but it feels like sometimes they feel like they want to be Hollywood, but they're not quite. And there seems to be a little more of an obsession in the city than most cities that I've been to.
Do you ever just want to, like, you know, pull the hat down, put the glasses on, pull the hoodie up, and just watch the hockey game at the ACC and not have to run around and be Daniel Negreanu?
Most people are cool, you know? And like when I go to the ACC and I, you know, sit in those great poker star seats, during the game people don't usually bother me. You know, on the intermissions, they might a little bit. But overall, it's not that much of a nuisance that I'd ever, you know, be that guy who says, it sucks. Woe is me, FML, you know? I'm like, really? It's like, it's part of the deal, you know, and life could be worse. It's not that big a deal. And again, as long as it's not intrusive where you got drunks who just literally want to hang out with you and where they say, like, give me your number. I'm like, what? What do you mean? You want my phone number? No. I mean, that's weird.
Yeah, that's definitely a little creepy. Who do you get starstruck with? I know in this job, you know, athletes are athletes. They're just regular people. I get starstruck with, like, the movie stars and like, the musicians. Is there anybody that – any walk of life that does that to you?
I don't buy into the BS. I just, because I mean, I've been around enough of those people that they're not all that smart. It's just, I don't know. I judge people for based on not what they've done in the past. Having said that, there was probably the one person I met that I was most kind of uncomfortable but happy to meet was Barack Obama.
That's not bad.
Yeah, I met Barack and he knew who I was, which really definitely tripped me out.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, you're the poker player guy. I'm like, you're Barack Obama. Like, you're kind of a big deal. He mentioned that he played poker and the whole deal.
You dropped Phil Hellmuth's name a lot, though.
Yeah.
It's not, you don't have a little Phil obsession?
No. He's just funny. He's such a cartoon character, that boy.
We did a show once with him on the old show where we had a ding sound, and he didn't know we were doing it, but we'd ding every time he'd name drop. And it was, yeah. You know, 13 was his record. 13
that's,
name drops.
I would have, like, bet the over.
Yeah, well, you know, that's 13 different names, because he tends to, you know, he gets into stories about someone. He can't just say that he was out with Eva Longoria. It has to be a story.
I don't know. It's just not my thing. Like, Phil will always tell me, like, oh, you know, I've got this event and with you know, Bill Clinton and blah, Donald Trump and da da da, and you know, I might be able to get you there. I'm like, but I don't want to go. Like, he's like, well, Tiger Woods is having this bash, and I'm like, yeah, but I'm gonna be grinding that day. Like, it's not, I don't go out of my way to meet celebrities. I mean, if I was going to do a charity event to help a cause that I think is worthwhile and it happens to be a celebrity event, then cool. You know, I'll have fun with it. But I don't actively decide, oh, I'm going to go to this charity event because the celebrity is there. It's just not how I think. And, you know, me and Phil are just different that way, big time.
Daniel Legrano is our special guest here on The Poker Show with Chris DeCero. This show is brought to you by PartyPoker.net. We'll continue after the break here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome to the party in Las Vegas. PartyPoker.net invites you to play for a spot in the biggest tournament on the planet, the World Series of Poker. Play in one of the daily qualifiers and earn your way to the WSOP with a $14,000 prize package. Play for free at PartyPoker.net to see if you've got what it takes to get to Vegas. Qualify now at PartyPoker.net. Terms and conditions apply. Players must be aged 18 or over.
Welcome back to The Poker Show with Chris DeCero, brought to you by PartyPoker.net. Rob Wong joined in studio by Daniel Negreanu. I feel like we're just starting to scratch the surface here, Daniel, on all these these great stories. And you're talking about Phil Hellmuth in the last segment. And, you know, we see the type of person he is at the table on TV. And I don't know how much that of that is a show for the cameras. I mean, can you tell us a little bit about what Phil Hellmuth, the real person, is like?
He's an emotional character. You know, at the core, Phil Hellmuth is a good person. He really is. He's got his own issues, but he's aware of them, which is kind of interesting. Like, he knows he's got ego issues, but he can laugh at it, which I think is important, especially in this little side story, but this book I've been reading about ego. And, you know, when you're aware of it, you kind of actually lessen its effect on your life. Having said that, like, his bursts and all that stuff you see on TV, that's all really him. You know, sometimes he may embellish a little bit because he knows a camera's on. But having said that, he does that when the cameras are off, you know. He's just he just doesn't get that sometimes things don't go his way, and that's life, bro, you know?
Well, people always want, you know, those are questions people ask. What's Phil Hellmuth really like? But you don't get that so much about you. What's Daniel Negreanu really like? Because you put so much of yourself out there. You know, you're very open about things. People, I think, feel like they live their life with you at certain points of time because you let people in to a great degree in your life.
And I'm cool with that. I feel like I don't want any skeletons in my closet. And if I throw out anything that's remotely close to a skeleton, I've got a clean record. I've never been involved in any scandal. I've never associated myself with people that, like, you know, are scandalous. I'm pretty open about the fact that I'm opinionated, you know, and there's certain people I don't like. And if the question is like, what am I really like? Well, I'm pretty opinionated about certain things, and I'm passionate about my beliefs. And I don't want my gravestone to say loved by everyone, because if I feel like I was loved by those that I don't like, that doesn't make any sense. If I don't like you, why would you like me? And that's for you, Annie Duke. That's for you, Howard Lederer. That's for you, Chris Ferguson. That's for you. I don't expect you to like me because I don't want people like you to like me, period.
And as you've gone through this, and it's been interesting. I mean, you started this weekly rant video blog that you're doing, which is a interesting because it's an insight. It's quite often just you doing, you know, sort of a more serious Robin Williams stream of consciousness. You just say what's on your mind and what you're thinking about. And you've been really out there with it and really, you know, straightforward with it. Is there any point where you just want, you know, try and rein yourself back in and go, maybe I've gone too far, or do you just let it hang out?
No, I think I can go farther. I can push farther. You know, and again, you know what I've been most happy with is I've started this weekly rant, and I'm obviously touching on controversial subjects on a regular basis, and I've never gotten any sort of negative flack by poker stars or anyone to muzzle me, because I think they realize when you get me to represent you, you know, you're going to get genuine me, you know, not a corporate watered down version of me. And some of the things I'm going to say, you might wince and go, I wish you wouldn't say that, but it's going to be real, you know, and I'm okay with that. Sure, I probably do cross the line a couple times here and there, but that's okay because that's just life. And you know, I'm not going to make excuses for those types of things. If I screw up, I'll say so. You know, if I said something was wrong, but you know, that's just who I am.
And aside from the sponsor, I mean, what's been the feedback from the poker world? I mean, you have to figure fans love the juicy things that you say every once in a while. But from the players that you know, I mean, have they said anything regarding these weekly
rants? I've gotten 99%. Most people really love it. The one thing that I've gotten, which I completely understand from some of these people's perspective, but they don't understand my view and how I feel it, is, I mean, I bash Annie Duke on a regular basis because she's an awful human being. And she's in our industry representing women of poker or as an ambassador. And I think she's a horrible representative of our industry. So people say, you know, you kind of crack on her too often. I say, here's the problem, though. So many people still don't know. So I'm doing your radio show. A lot of people say, oh, I thought Annie was a real nice woman. No, she's awful. She's an absolute liar, a thief, and a scammer. So you know, I'd feel like if so many people have come to me like, oh, I wish I would have talked to you first. You know, people who've done business with her and got screwed over. I'm like, then I feel bad because I'm like, I should have told them. So I'll be muzzled in that regard when she moves on, when the door finally kicks her butt out of our industry and people stop looking at her as a potential, you know, person to do business with. Then I'll be done with it. But until that point, the public deserves to know that kind of stuff.
And when you've put that out there. Again, it's strange because, you know, there tends to be a lot of poison at times in this world, especially a world like poker that can sometimes be centered around the internet. As you know, the stupid forums go crazy over the smallest thing. But that's something that really hasn't come back on you in any great degree, which means that it seems like you're speaking for a lot of people when you throw something like that out there. And you've never, ever pulled a punch with Annie Duke. I mean,
I think because, first of all, the people that get to know her, they all feel the same way. There's a version of her publicly that people don't know that, you know, that's not, they're not within the industry. But almost to a man, the majority of the people in poker do not like this woman and do not like the fact that she in any way, shape or form represents us. So in that sense, I'm on the right side, if you will. And I think whether people like what I have to say or not, people genuinely appreciate forums or not, that I'm telling it like it is and I'm not watering down every answer. Because it's much easier to say, well, you know, it's great that we have so many people in poker that are blah. I'm going to tell the truth. This one, like them. This one, blah. You know, you ask me a question, I'll give you an answer.
Well, and you're not afraid to back it up, too. I mean, inside the poker business, there were a few people that knew about, for example, the Tournament of Champions thing with Annie Duke, where she chopped the money, and it wasn't supposed to. It was in the rules, I believe, that you couldn't chop the money. And a few people knew that, but the vast majority of the public didn't know that that was a chopped up thing. No. And it went against the rules.
Well, the biggest problem I have is, aside from the rules, whatever, they made a deal. That's not even a problem. But Phil Hellmuth publicly told the truth. She publicly lied.
Yeah.
Repeatedly. And tried to say that she didn't. You did too, you liar. Like, she's got such a long laundry list of lies, and it's frustrating when you see these types of things, and then people come back and they think one thing that's just so inaccurate, and I'm not one to allow people to continue in our industry to lie and be in positions where they have any sort of control over how the direction of our industry. And she's just the wrong choice for any one of those positions.
Now, with your one of the strengths of you as a poker player is your ability to read personalities and to read people. In life, it's a little bit different, right? And I know that through your life, you've had, you know, the odd relationship where you've read it wrong. And is it hard to do that, to take your professional perspective, your ability to reason things out, and just like sometimes you make calls knowing that you're dead, you know, you do something and you kind of feel like it's against your read, but you just do it anyway?
Well, I think the interesting thing there is, and I've thought about that a lot, is the reads are always there. It's what you choose to do with them. Do you choose to ignore them because you don't want them to be true? And I think, for example, the relationship I know you're talking about, for me, it was a case of like, okay, I'm reading that she is not telling me the truth, but I don't want to not be with her because I love her so much. So I'd rather try to make this work, even though I feel like I'm being lied to because my read is telling me that. And that's just that's just part of being human, you know, because you don't want to believe that's true. And I think we find ways to justify or to fool ourselves into avoiding, like, listening to our reads. And that's kind of, you know, certainly what I did in that one. Yeah. I was lying to myself, basically.
Daniel Negreanu joining us in studio here on The Poker Show, Rob Wong and Chris DeCero. Let's talk about some happier things, I guess. I mean, from reading your Twitter feed and seeing all these stories about you on the internet, I mean, it seems like you have a busy life. I mean, is it a 7-day-a-week gig for Daniel Negreanu? When do you take time off? When do you decide to take time off? How does that work?
Two different gears. You know, real busy and then chill. Like, I like the chill. You know, when I'm chilling, I chill in Vegas, I'm on the couch doing nothing. You know, maybe playing a little golf, playing soccer. Recently, you know, I've sort of added a little bit of extra to my list because that weekly rant that I do, I spend like 12 hours on that on Tuesdays, usually to have it done by Wednesday. And I spend all week thinking about things to add to the show because I just love it and it's a creative outlet for me. But as far as, you know, being on the road and stuff, you know, they keep me pretty busy. Not to the point where it drives me crazy. And if it starts to, then I just, you know, scale it back a little bit.
You're a guy who your personality is you become enamored with things over periods of time. I mean, when it was golf, you built probably one of the coolest backyard putting chipping facilities I've ever seen, put a golf simulator in your house, hired a personal coach and caddy, and played golf like 36 holes a day for quite a long stretch of time, and then that kind of faded. And it was, and like the, you mentioned the video blogs, you started to do the video blogs, and it, first it was just you and a camera, and then it was like lighting and studio lighting and better cameras. And like, is this part of your release to just sort of get all caught up in something, really enjoy it for a while, and then just move on?
Yeah, I don't move on though. Like, for example, the weekly random, something I'm gonna, I plan on doing forever. The golf thing, I'd love to and plan on doing it forever. You just can't golf in December in Vegas. It's not worth it. And I just have not been in Vegas enough to actually get going. And usually in May, that's what I'm doing. But May changed this year because we got the scoops that you can't play from the U.S. and you, WPT Championships, smack dab in the middle. You had the EPT Grand Finals. So this time of relaxation for the series that I would normally spend golfing, just not available anymore. And it really just comes down to free time. But I still love being on the golf course.
Anything else you're starting to pick up now? Ukulele, guitar, bass, anything?
Well, just, you know, like I'm learning so much about editing and, you know, by myself. I just, if I don't know how to do something, I just Google, I just go on YouTube and some 12-year-old girl teaches me how to do it. You know,
it's like, unbelievable. YouTube's, you know, great.
How
for
do
that
I
stuff.
Do cutaways with video? And some 12-year-old will teach me. But it's fun, like, you know, messing with some of that stuff. I mean, who knows where it's going to go. I'm thinking about adding some more videos that are slightly different that are outside of poker. The weekly rant I always want to do, but I want to keep it poker. And then I might just do some stuff that I find interesting. Like maybe I'll do a Survivor rant. You know, maybe I'll just,
Well, I've been waiting for your Celebrity Apprentice rant. Because, yeah. I mean, you're due for a good Aubrey rant.
That woman is such a... She reminds me of someone else.
Another redhead?
Yeah. She's just such... I mean, she's so... It's so amazing to me how some celebrities can lack self-awareness so much. She's doing interviews and saying things. She doesn't realize, like, don't you realize how bad you're coming off right now? And she simply doesn't have that filter. She just doesn't get it at all. That now we're going to do an Aubrey O'Day.
Here we go.
Yeah. And meanwhile, that Lisa Lampanelli giving crap to Diana Mendoza, who's actually been... classy, yep. Tries to work. Well, so she's got a little bit of a language barrier, and you crap on her because she's hot and you're ugly. You know, just because you've had issues with your own looks and your own weight, you know, you don't dump on a woman who's never said anything rude to you. Diana Mendoza's been all class, and I'm not saying that because she's hot, okay?
So, but she is.
But, you know, she's pretty to look at, like a piece of art.
That's yes.
What I've explained it that way, and that's what I mean, okay? I'm telling one specific person. Anyway, you're listening because I know you always do. But... Anyway, move on.
Yeah, well, you know what? You have. We'll just leave it at that. You have shown an appreciation for fine-looking women over your life, and some of them have had titles. So, you know, it's. I would say that you would be somewhat of an expert when it came
titles.
To titles. Titles, yes.
Miss Hungry.
Miss Hungry.
She's sweet. She's such a nice girl.
She is a lovely lady.
She's very, very nice. We're still friends, but that didn't end up happening because, you know, whatever. I'm single and. I don't know.
I don't want to get into this too much, but is it tough to have relationships with the profession that you have? I mean, like you said, you're traveling so much, and it's almost like the life of a professional athlete, it seems.
I think it can be easy or tough. Depends on how much effort you put into it. It really just comes down to a certain kind of chemistry, you know, and I've learned through trial and error that, for me, the most important aspect is, it's aside from looks, because I think cute is sexy. I prefer cute anyway, I like a personality. I mean, you got to be able to write. You got to be able to, like, have opinions, and you got to be able to, like, you know, roll in a conversation. If you just sit there and don't say anything, that's usually a turnoff for me.
And you seem to come up with these girls that are not just beautiful, but they're very quick. They've always seemed to have a sense of humor. They're very funny and quick with the wit. Is that just...
Not all. The one I fell in love with definitely did.
Yeah.
Yeah, she messed my head up pretty good for a while. But
Well, Krista did too. Krista was a very funny girl. She just, the language barrier seemed to... I remember being at the Jays game and explaining to her how the umpire could tackle the batter if the guy missed the ball.
That was actually sad. We went to a baseball game last year and there was like 75 people there at a Blue Jays game. And, you know, it's just the atmosphere was awful. And it was sad because it's the first Jay games I've really been to in a while. I used to be in the city when there's 50,000 people going to the Jays games. And it's just, the atmosphere was sad. And it was kind of boring, you know? She didn't really love it because it's just, I don't know, the lack of an energy in a crowd being there, it makes a big effect, I think.
Yeah, I think a lot of Blue Jays fans would agree with that, with the attendance that shows up sometimes at Rogers Center for Blue Jays games. Can you stick around for one more segment?
Sure.
All right, perfect. I'll take that as a yes. Daniel Negreanu, our special guest here on The Poker Show with Chris DeCiro, brought to you by PartyPoker.net. I'm Rob Wong. This is Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome to the party in Las Vegas. PartyPoker.net invites you to play for a spot in the biggest tournament on the planet, the World Series of Poker. Play in one of the daily qualifiers to earn your way to the WSOP with a $14,000 prize package and a chance to win your share of over $192 million in prize money. Qualify now and play for free at PartyPoker.net. Terms and conditions apply. Players must be aged 18 or over.
This is the Poker Show with Chris DeCero, brought to you by PartyPoker.net on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm Rob Wong. Daniel Negreanu, our special in-studio guest, joining
co-host.
Us for
He's the
one
co-host.
Final co-host. Yeah. You know what? I'll just step back. You guys can just go at it. But.
We'd have to change the name a little bit. Might have to call it the PokerStars.net. You know what I'm saying? Like, just saying.
With Daniel Negreanu.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would accept second billing in that. Yeah. Listen. We talk a lot about you, about the things that you're doing, what you've done in the past, your accomplishments and things like that. But what I don't hear a lot of people talk to you about, and I want to ask you about, is your future. You know, you're not quite kid poker anymore. You're approaching middle-age poker, and I don't mean that as a joke. I just mean that as in a statement of reality. You've got a great life. You know, your agent, Brian Balzba, said that, you know, it was his Super Bowl when he signed you to your last contract. So without knowing any of the figures or making them public, you're doing okay. You're making a decent living. You're probably not going to be homeless or hungry anytime soon. What does your future hold for you? And how far ahead do you look in your life?
If my future looks a lot like my present, then I'll be happy. I try to focus most of my attention. Again, this is from Eckhart Tolle. I don't know if you're familiar, but
yep.
Yeah. So Eckhart Tolle talks a lot about being in the now and focusing on that. And a lot of anxiety that you feel about the future or regret about the past is just wasted emotion. So I don't look at, okay, in the future, I'm going to be happy when such and such happens. I'm happy now. And if I continue to live the life that I'm leading now and I don't really plan on making any big changes, the only things that I would say that I'd like to be more consistent with is physically, be more active, doing more exercise, getting like more workouts in, and just being in better physical shape, you know, because I think your mind works better. And also continue to build on the momentum that I have poker-wise. And it's a trying time for poker because we don't know what's going to happen with legislation. So I think it's going to be exciting to see how things, you know, sort of how the chips fall after all this is done, because there's a lot of chaos at this point in terms of what could or couldn't happen. So I'll be around poker for a long time. You know, whether there's a family in the future depends on whether or not, you know, do you know whether there's a family in the future?
Is there something specific that you'll have to, well, I mean, you'll cross that bridge when you get there, but is there something that when that happens, you know, it's time to step away? I mean, like we see with, you don't want to be Michael Jordan, right? You don't want to be suiting up for the Washington Wizards when you're past your prime, but you're still hanging on. Is there something like that? I mean,
I talked to my agent Brian about this the other day, and I said, you know, if I had $10,000 to my name, an apartment, and a laptop, I told him, I said, within 3 years, I'll have $1 million without getting any help from anyone. I just know that I have that, and I don't think I'll ever lose it. And in terms of ever passing my prime or being done, it'll never happen to me because I won't allow it to. You know, people have argued that I was washed up. You know, people, oh, you know, he's done. He can't play against tough players. Really? How about this? My super high rollers, I've like got, you know, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, eighth. I've like, you know, done very, very well in those things, and those are generally against, you know, the better players. So I feel very confident in my ability to always adjust and always stay relevant, not just for my big mouth, but for my results. And I've had at least $1 million in cashes pretty much every year except one where I had like 700. And, you know, I don't see any reason why. I love doing it. You know, I love stats. I love numbers. And I got a lot more things that I want to do in poker.
Well, and you've got people like Doyle, you know, who continue to prove. Doyle still plays in the biggest games in the world, plays cash games, and, you know, seems to do pretty well. I think he just had a run not long ago where he posted 13 or 14 straight days booking a win playing in a huge cash game. There's no expiry date on poker players.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's one of the, you know, big keys. Like, you know, you think about people in their prime in sport.
Yeah.
They have to quit. But in poker, prime used to be considered 40, you know. So, and Doyle is 77. If I'd be blessed to have my wits about me as he does at that age, because, you know, there is a point where you start to lose it a little bit in terms of your mental ability to process information as quickly as younger people. But then you also gain wisdom and, you know, a self-awareness about yourself that, you know, sort of combats that a little bit. So it's just it's an evolution. It's a change. I was talking to Josh Ari about this on Twitter. It was kind of funny. He's like, oh, my God. He's like, who would have thunk? I just use the old man image. You know, yeah. Me and Josh are like the young kids in the scene. He's like, now he's a dad. He's got kids. I just use the old man image. Like, oh, you know, the old guys would never pull that move. Right? So yeah. I found myself doing that a little bit. I'm like, okay, I'm using the old man image. Cool.
Well, but you also see some of your contemporaries, and you talk about, you know, Josh stays in there, John Juanda, these guys that you kind of came in at the same time, burst onto the scene with. You know, some of them are still relevant and still playing and at the top of their games, and some of them have faded away. You know, what do you think the difference is?
Drive, competitiveness, and just the need. Like, here's the thing. When you're in your early 20s, most of those people, all they need to do is play poker, you know, and that's all you have to do. Once you've done that for 10 years, some of these guys have families, they have a wife, they have responsibilities. Poker isn't the center of their life. Look at Tiger Woods, perfect example of a guy who, you know, in his early life when he was single or whatever, he just played golf all the time. Now he has children. He needs to see those kids. So time that would be spent, better spent in terms of his career golfing, life sacrifices of saying, no, I need to spend this time with my kids rather than hitting 1,000 balls before 7 a.m. today.
But in a strange way, you segue to another part that's important, and that this is an industry where sometimes temptation is your worst enemy.
Oh, I did? I segued there? I think you segued there.
talking about Tiger Woods, right? And yeah. You know, we've seen these guys. I mean, there's the big public burnouts that people know of because they've watched, you know, the Stu Unger story on TV. But, I mean, there's a thousand stories like that in the poker world where guys with tons of talent and tons of ability, you know, it's...
Well, I actually did a weekly rant on this specific topic where I talked about Bobby Fischer and Stu Unger and people like that. And the thing, it's a dangerous thing to become so immersed in anything you do and lose balance in life because eventually you crack. I mean, Bobby Fischer is a perfect example of that. And I always try to tell these young guys, yeah, you know, work as hard as you can now, but make sure you find balance at some point. Because if you don't, burnout is very likely and satisfaction in life is less likely. You know, you're going to make all this money, but if you just continue to do the same thing, what for? Like, when is your end goal? When are you done? Like, what do you want to do? What do you want to make this money for specifically? And you got to figure out, you know, a lot of it is just for time, you know, so you can have free time to do what you want. But what is that? What is that balance? And I think for a lot of young guys, my advice would be to figure out what makes you happy outside of poker and understand that poker is a vehicle to get to that point.
What do you want the money for?
Huh?
What do you want the money for?
Suites and first class seats. What?
He wants to make it rain.
I want some bling bling watches. No, I'm kidding. On that note, I've never met a guy with a $100,000 watch that wasn't like at least 30% douchebag. I mean, if you have a $100,000 watch, you're overcompensating for something.
Roll back your sleeves. No. Yeah. No, I'm good.
You're like,
no.
you get a really big watch because you got a really small.
I asked Chris this question last week, and you know, I always love taking it back to sports, but for hockey, I mean, the European style of the game, it's finesse. The North American style, it's rough and tumble. Is there a Canadian style of poker? I mean, you're one of the pioneers, and like, do you see that with you know, different people all over the world? Is there certain different styles depending on their nationality? Do you find?
Yeah, there is, but I would say that there's more of like a North American style versus a European style, and North American a little more, let's say, thinking inside the box, while Europeans are a little more outside the box type thinkers. They are more creative. There's a lot more creativity. Also, you know, they're much more difficult to play against in a lot of ways because they're capable so much. Having said that, they're not as centered and as grounded in terms of the fundamentals, but they can be tough to play against. So I think combining both approaches and, you know, creating like the ultimate poker player is the goal. But there's definitely tendencies like Scandies, for example. You know, they're famous for getting in like 6 bets, 7 bets with like 9 deuce offsuit and stuff like that, which is you're going to see less likely with, you know, typical American players.
Do you think there's a flattening out of that to a certain extent because of the internet? I mean, in the same way that television, you want to look at the television example, television made everybody sound more the same. There became a standard sort of no
so
accent.
True, 'cause all you guys and me are like, hello, I'm Robin Wong, and we're bringing to you live from blah, blah, blah. You know, you guys all have the same spiel, all you media people.
I don't spiel.
Yeah, you don't. Yeah, maybe you, but you definitely do that.
Yeah,
whole,
no, I definitely
you,
do.
I do this thing, you watch sports and TV, like, you know, hi, I'm Daniel Grotto, bringing you, why am I screwing that up? But you know what I mean?
No, I know what you're talking about,
yeah. So what was the question?
The question is do you think there's a flattening out of styles because the internet
a little bit.
Is a global thing and everyone sees everyone else's style. And it used to be that European players only played against European players. And so when you go play them live at a tournament, there was a definitive style, a Northern European style. French
yeah,
played a certain way.
There's definitely more of a merge of like, I guess you would say online. the online grinder approach. And the online grinders that are American, Swedish, Italian are usually going to end up playing pretty similarly.
All right. Who's the most overrated poker player out there now?
Oh, I'll get in trouble because he doesn't like me and I don't like him, so I won't say.
Oh, and there it is. Wait, see, you just moderated yourself.
Yeah, that one I have to moderate for now. Give it a minute.
Well, I guess on the flip side, who's the most underrated, if that's possible?
Oh, there's so many good young players. You know, it's just hard to say. Man, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, it's such a tough question. So many guys are underrated, and a lot of it is because they don't get a lot of attention because they simply don't, you know, they haven't had, like, the exposure yet. But I don't know.
Do you mentor anybody? Can you see yourself doing that?
You know, I have friends that I talk to that are good, like Jason Somerville and, you know, Adam Junglin, a couple guys that, you know, did some stuff for me at Poker VT for a while. They both still do, actually. But, and then, you know, Lex Veldus, we talk some tournament strategy. And I also talk to Phil Ivey, who's pretty good about poker once in a while. But in terms of mentoring someone right now, it's just such a job.
Yeah, it's a sort of a tough space, too, because stylistically, I mean, it's an interesting time for the poker world. You got people like Vanessa Selps, who's like aggressive and hard driving and, you know, 4 bets and 5 bets and 6 bets. And her goal is to get her hands on some chips early. And if she gets her hands on some chips, she's going to make your life miserable at the table. You've got, you know, older guard guys like Phil, you know, like Helmuth, who are just going to play that same steady, straightforward style and try and get you to make a mistake and things like that. You know, there's everybody's styles. They all work to a certain degree. You know, you have your style, small ball poker. You've been playing it for a long time. You know, people are talking about it now. And the stuff that you've been doing for 10 years is starting to come out, you know, the sort of min-raise type of stuff. And very careful bet sizing, like very precise bet sizing is coming out with players. How do you juggle all this around with people?
Well, I mean, I just come back to my roots. And I think the fact is, like 10 years ago, I mean, I was the only one. There's like two other guys, tops, that were, you know, min raising or close to it. And now pretty much that's the standard. And there's always evolutions in poker where people start to figure things out. But I think a lot of these styles that you see that are outside of the norm, you have to like look at 5-10 years from now if that's still working for those people. Because, you know, there's luck in poker too. There's a couple guys who've had some success and you wonder, like, how the hell did that even happen? And, you know, a lot of it's just random standard deviation. So the true test is 5-10 year span. How's that player doing after that period of time? So that's when you can really gauge whether the strategy has merit or not.
We were having this debate a couple weeks ago on Twitter, some poker journalists talking back and forth. Is there a triple crown in poker? EPT, WSOP, WPT, open events? What's your opinion of that?
Is there a triple crown in baseball? Because people say that there is, there is. So if someone says that there's a triple, I mean, literally, what is there, like, does the Major League Baseball, what do they give an award for triple crown?
No, they don't have an award for it. No.
They don't have an award. Yeah. It's just something that people made up, and they decide that that's what it is. So if I say, oh, there's a triple crown. I did Bob McCowan, the poker show, and Canada AM. I did the triple crown. I'm the first, you know, that's a triple crown now. I mean, I think it's debatable in terms of, like, whether you want to call it that or not. I think it's three interesting tours, and if you got to win on all three, that's pretty cool. You want to call it a triple crown? Cool.
But you're a stats guy. I mean, you're a money guy. You follow this stuff very closely. You know, the idea of points, tournament player of the year, points, things like that. You do follow that stuff very closely.
Yeah, very much.
It's important to you.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So, but you don't think there's a difference? Like, you know, I would say an APPT crown doesn't count. An LAPT crown doesn't count. That's not, to me, a major tournament victory.
I definitely think the EPT is elevated to the point where it's actually the most successful tour. You know, the World Poker Tour has been around a little bit longer, of course, but and they've suffered a little bit because of the U.S. But EBT is definitely like one of those prestigious events, as are WPTs and World Series Poker Bracelets. So in terms of like regular tours, those would be the three that I would count as being the three most reputable in terms of like mainstream.
All right, I'll hang this one out there for you. Low-hanging fruit, the WSOP. How many bracelets are you going to win this year? 12? Over under 12 bracelets just this year?
I'm going to go under... under 12 bracelets.
Yeah.
Over 0 bracelets. Somewhere in that neighborhood.
It's not a bad prediction.
Yeah.
Just got about 30 seconds left here. Anything you'd like to promote? We know you're big on Twitter and you mentioned the weekly rant.
Well, just I guess I'll be playing the scoops, you know, and I think those are interesting because they offer like three different buy-in levels. So while I'll be playing like the 2000s, there's also a $200 and a $20. So you don't have to play against me, but you can play in the same event as me to some degree. So I think that's cool. I'll be playing that for the next week. Looking forward to getting my grind on. And other than that, you know, it's weekly rant time. I got to leave you guys and start editing.
And you're going to be in Toronto for the next week. You'll be playing scoop events, and you will not be out nightclubbing. You'll be early to bed, prepping yourself. I'm hoping we're going to get around to golf in
I
here.
Never told you the wheelchair story, I guess.
Go.
Oh, no. I'm going to get in trouble for that. We're wrapping up.
Well, we'll have to save that for another time. Yeah. But I appreciate you joining us, Daniel, for the whole hour. And enjoy your stay back in TO. It's good to see you again.
Cheers.
For Chris DeCero, I'm Rob Wong. This has been The Poker Show, brought to you by PartyPoker.net on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.